Welcome to the Play Your Way podcast. I am your host, Brian Miller.
And I'm your other host, Ethan Mace.
And today we are going to be giving an update on what we've been playing. But before we get into it, make sure to follow us on Twitter at PYW Podcast and Instagram at the PYW Podcast, as well as Twitch. Now we will be streaming pretty consistently over at Playing Your Way. That is all one word, Playing ING Your Way. Make sure to follow us, get updates, get streaming, all the whole nine. But you know, one of the things when it comes to this episode, you know, getting caught up in like just, you know, coming up with episode ideas and episode titles and just being creative and like, what do we want to talk about next week and this and that, sometimes we forget about talking about really what we're actually playing, you know, and giving updates on that. So we're going to be talking about what we're playing today.
So currently I'm playing two games. I am playing Thracia 776. I've talked about it a little bit, but I'll get a little bit more in depth in it as this podcast goes on.
Right.
And I am also currently going through Mass Effect 2 again. But there's a little bit of a twist on that one. I guess we'll start there because that's where the fun's really at.
Yeah.
So when the Legendary Edition like dropped that trailer, I was really getting an itch to kind of play Mass Effect again. And Mass Effect 2 was always my favorite game in that whole trilogy.
Right.
So I figured, well, you know, I never 100%ed that game. Like, I never got all the achievements in that game. So I decided that I would finally do it. The only issue was that, like, I was missing, like, 7 achievements. But, like, the main 2 I were missing required me to beat the game on Insanity and the Shadow Broker DLC on like hardcore or Insanity, which didn't sound easy. It never sounded easy to me when I was playing the game. I always played the game on like easy mode back whenever I was going through it initially. So I was like, well, I'm so close to the game, like being done, and I really want to get this thing over. That way, like when the Legendary Edition drops, I can just completely, you know, like set these to the side and transition to this and play through that. Cause you know, once that comes out, we'll probably be streaming those games and whatnot. Yeah. I think it'll be a lot of fun to do that. But yeah, let's try an Insanity run. Let's see if we can knock out these last few achievements, get this game beat one last time, really put the game to rest. So I've been doing that and I'm getting close to the end. I am at the point of the game where you have to go into the Derelict Reaper to get the IFF. If you played the game, you understand that. If you don't, if you're like Brian here, you're probably just confused with all the words I'm saying.
I'm just nodding like, yeah.
That makes sense. But that's pretty far into the game at that point. I have died a total of 75 times. I've been making notes. I have a track of it. And when we beat the game and we make our post about the game being beat, I'll post this notes with that too, so everyone can see all of this.
You know how many times I've died on each mission. So far, the highest one is the Archangel mission where I've died 14 times.
And yeah, I usually die about 6 or 7 times. At least I did.
Okay.
I kind of turned a corner like the past few days, and my death, I think I just kind of figured things out.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I was like, I don't want to say it was a get good situation, but it was kind of just like that. I'm like, okay, I finally figured out what I need to do. And like at one point I finally like my deaths just dropped to 1 and then it was like 4, then it was 1. And then I ran into the collector ship mission, which was by far the hardest mission I've played in this game yet.
Ooh.
Where I went up to 7 again, but then I was down to 1, then 3, and then like, and so like my totals have really dropped lately.
Right.
I think it'd be really funny if I finished this game with like 100 deaths, like even, you know, but
what's funny too is it's kind of sad because I would play the game on easy and probably get twice as many deaths as what you're getting now on Insanity.
The game is very forgiving on an easy mode.
Yeah.
As someone who has played it on there, it's pretty forgiving. And on here, I mean, like, I pop out and my shields drop immediately.
Yeah, right.
They're just gone. And a lot of the times when I die in the game, it's because I get greedy And I'm like, I'm trying to steal a kill that should just be hiding behind cover.
Yeah, right.
And like waiting for my health to regenerate and my shields to regenerate. But I'm trying to like steal kills and whatnot. And it's just
some strategy to it.
Yeah. Well, the strategy, the smart strategy is to play cautiously.
Yeah.
And wait. Cause like they'll sometimes, like the enemies will sometimes press on you and like overwhelm you, but they don't do it a ton. And sometimes I've had deaths like that where they just get bad angles on me and there's nothing I can do.
Right.
And that's pretty frustrating. But a lot of the times when I die, it's usually like I overextended, you know?
Right. Yeah. True.
It was something that I could, it's something that I could easily correct.
Yeah.
And which I think is how I managed to turn that corner a few days ago.
Mm.
But yeah, I've been having I'm surprised, honestly, at how much fun I've been having with it. I was very scared coming into this run because I never played the game above easy mode. So making that jump to insanity, I thought was going to just be borderline impossible. But it's been doable to this point. And it's been fun. Somehow. I don't understand it, but it's making me want to do more challenging stuff.
Actually, it's kind of funny because you were starting to talk about difficulty levels and kind of preferring the more challenging ones with, was it with genealogy or did that start with Thracia?
So genealogy was harder than, like, genealogy isn't itself like a super hard game, but it is harder than like the Fire Emblems that I have played
right.
in the past. Just because like you don't have like a casual mode, you gotta manually calculate like the damage you're gonna do and stuff like that because it'll tell you. It's harder just because it doesn't have a lot of quality of life stuff to it. Mm. Thracia is the one that is supposed to be really hard.
Well, you built up to it though, because yeah, genealogy was harder than the ones you played, but it was kind of like a, like, you know, putting your foot in the water. Then you went to the Thracia, and then now, out of nowhere, you're like, let me revisit Mass Effect 2. Oh yeah, so I have to beat this game in insanity. Well, I have been playing difficult games lately.
Yeah, I mean, it, going from Thracia to like insanity, Mass Effect 2.
Yeah,
it's such a massive jump,
right?
You know. But I'm starting to feel like once I beat this, because I know what's waiting for me at the end, and I know it's not going to be fun.
Okay.
Because I don't like fighting that boss on like easy.
Yeah.
So I know I'm not gonna like fighting that boss on insanity, and I know I'm not gonna like fighting the boss at the Shadow Broker DLC on insanity either. But I know what's waiting for me at the end of all this. And I feel like once I've overcome all that, there's really not a whole ton left for me to be scared of when it comes to difficulties.
Right.
I feel like this is really like this. I think this right here is really the barrier. Like I've been knocking on the door for a good while now.
Okay.
And now the door's just kind of flung open.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I gotta know. I want to ask this. I'm going to force you to give me an answer.
Okay.
What's your prediction on death count for the final boss?
For the final boss. Oh my gosh. I haven't played that boss in a while, so I don't remember exactly what all it'll do.
Okay.
But just knowing how insanity has been running, if I die less than 10 times to that boss, I'll be happy.
Okay, that's kind of a low number, lower than I was expecting.
I mean, I don't think I'll die. I mean, again, like when I die more than 6 or 7 times,
right.
That's when I start getting frustrated because that's where my average has been.
Yeah.
And even then now, like now I've gotten to the point where like if I start dying at all, I start getting annoyed because I just haven't been.
Jeez.
So yeah, I don't anticipate too much death. I just know that like ammo is limited. I'm always running out of ammo.
Right.
I'm always having to scrounge for everything because like the way it works, like the way the difficulty works in this game is like as the difficulty gets higher, the enemies will do more damage to you, but they'll also get like, they'll get more shields. They'll get more armor. And like, and so like, it's not like them themselves are like, tough or anything, they're just getting like more and more health bars added to them.
Gosh.
That you have to just keep dropping.
Good grief.
And I'm like, I can't even imagine what this, like what I'm going to be looking at with this final boss. And like,
the weapon I'm using is super powerful. I'm using like the Widowmaker.
Okay.
Because I'm playing as the Infiltrator class. But it only has like 13 shots on it. Dang. And I'm like, that's not going to get me through there.
Do you ever miss your shots?
Oh, all the time, oh. Which is awful. Because you saw, it's a sniper, you know?
Yeah.
And the class is good because, you know, it's got the function of like slowing down time when you aim down, okay. When you aim down sight.
That's cool.
So it makes it a little bit easier, but I still miss my shots occasionally. And it's so frustrating because my ammo is so limited, yeah, on this gun because it's so powerful. If I hit a headshot on an enemy, they're dead.
Yeah.
But if I miss, you know, that's one of my 13 that are just gone. And I got to find more clips,
man. That's going to be fun. Are you going to stream this final boss?
If people want to see it, I'll definitely stream like the final mission, like the whole collector based mission.
I might, if you don't stream, I might have to come over just to watch that final ending there, the boss.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be frustrating.
Oh, man.
To go through.
Okay. Well, so, you know, you got Mass Effect 2. How's the Thracia gameplay been going? Because I know you've been trying to play that on the weekends.
So I haven't played it in probably about a week or so, but I'm going to start playing it again today once we're done recording.
Yeah.
But it's been fun, you know, like with the time that like I have put into it up to this point. You know, still challenging, but I'm starting to figure out how to break the game. Okay. You know, the game is challenging like up to a certain point, but once you figure out it gives you the tools to break it. And once you figure out how to break it, you really can break that game. Mm. It's got low stat caps for all your characters.
Okay.
And so like all your characters can cap their stats very early. And a lot of the enemies in the games just aren't very strong in general when it comes to stats.
Right.
So it's pretty easy to just have super strong characters by using scrolls, which will augment the growth rates of characters.
Okay.
Because that's how, you know, Fire Emblem works. You know, each character has a set growth rate, which is basically just a percentage chance of how much each skill will grow with each level. But the scrolls in this game will affect those growth rates in certain ways. And so you can like say someone has a 70% growth rate in like magic or something, it's like right. They're a mage class, and you put a scroll on them that enhances magic growth by 30%. They now have 100% growth rate in that. So every time they level up, they're going to increase magic, you know?
Right. Oh, gosh.
Like, you're guaranteeing a magic. And yeah. Yeah, there are ways to really, like, to break that game. And you get arenas to grind in and whatnot. So it's interesting. I've been having fun with it, and I'm excited to get back to it.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I know you've been chipping away at that for a while now. So where are you at? Are you about halfway or coming up on halfway?
No, I think I'm on chapter 9 right now. So I'm getting to the halfway point.
Okay. But, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, fun times over there. Fun times.
Right.
So so for me, yeah. it's been of a very, very interesting one. Got a lot of games to talk about. Played a lot of games, but we'll dive into what I've actually completed. It's mid-February, and I've beat a total of 5 games. The first one I beat this year was Persona 5 Royal, which we've talked about pretty extensively. And if you want to hear more about Persona 5 Royal and both of our thoughts on it, feel free to check out that episode titled Persona 5 Royal, where we dive deep into just all things of, you know, perspectives, opinions, what we like, what we dislike, and it's a good episode. So I'll spare you that listen. But second game of the year that I play, and the reason why I'm kind of going through the list, and we're kind of both going through the list, is because, I mean, it is only mid-February, and, you know, for me, I was able to knock out a game on an average of a week, week and a half basis. So, I mean, I got a lot that I've actually kind of been playing recently.
Right.
And we'll get to the ones that I've played but not yet beaten, but that'll be a story there. So it's the second game of the year, Pokemon Diamond, which I honestly, at the time, and I played this in January, and at the time, I was kind of excited to get into it because I had played in 2020 at the end of it, Pokemon Emerald, and I had not played that game since I played it as a kid. And so same with Pokemon Diamond. I had it as a kid and I never beat it. But I remember watching a lot of the anime and remember playing the game. So I was kind of like, okay, cool. Let's revisit this game. Haven't beat it. This will be cool. I remember the anime. I remember the Pokemon, the characters. Let's do it. And I beat it and I played it, but I was quickly reminded, and we've talked about this, just the Pokemon formula, the Pokemon RPG formula of,
right.
You know, you, I mean, gosh, you know, tons of routes with a lot of Pokemon battles, you know, trainer battles, you level up grinding. 'Cause well, experience sharing is very, very limited, just all these things. And it was an eye-opener into the Pokemon series, you know, which is kind of a sad thing, too, because, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, this is fun. I want to spend so many hours grinding and Pokemon trainer battles. But as an adult, I'm just like, oh, another route full of trainer battles. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah. I mean, I try to get around that now with the emulation, just the speed up function.
Yeah.
Because I don't have time to do that stuff anymore. So I had to drop Soul Silver. There was just too much grinding in it.
True. Yeah. I remember we were talking about that. Yeah, for sure. And that's just what it is. It makes it very formulaic. It kind of makes the gameplay a little dull. And it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, it is what it is. But I'll kind of get into this with the current game I'm playing, and I'm playing Pokemon X now. I'll kind of transition. I'll come back to the point that I'll make. But yeah, I play Pokemon Diamond. It picked up for me towards the end when those three legendary Pokemon came into the mix. Uxie, Mesprith, just things. Those three legendary Pokemon when they came in and kind of held down. I think it's Dialga. It's been a while. So I was like, oh, especially because it was kind of a blind playthrough at the end. I never got to the end part when they stepped in, and I was able to catch them before the Elite Four. It picked up. It made things interesting, and it made for a fun ending, and I ended on a good note. But, yeah, it was, you know, just it was a standard Pokemon game. But the third game I played this year so far is Zelda Minish Cap, Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap. And this one was, there's good and bad to it. It is a collect-a-thon. If you like,
perfect for you.
Nope. but if you are a fan of collecting this, if you're a fan of Nintendo, if you're a fan of Zelda, and a fan of just side quests and collecting things, and you have not played the Minish Cap, please go play it now. It is right up your alley, and it looks so good. It does look good for a Game Boy Advance game, and there's a lot jam packed into it.
Yeah, especially as old as it is, it's incredible how well made that game is.
Yeah. So, let's see. In terms of the Minish Cap too, and we've talked about this, and it's kind of an unfortunate epiphany I'm having, but just being glued to a walkthrough when it comes to you know, Zelda games, just figuring out, okay, puzzles for dungeons or figuring out the side quests to progress with the story. It's a bit above my skill level, and critical thinking skills, unfortunately. So I find myself glued to a walkthrough, which does diminish the experience for me. 'Cause I mean, if you're glued to a walkthrough the entire time, that's going to diminish the experience and the, you know, fun you have from it. But
yeah, you definitely don't want to shame people using walkthroughs, but it does get to a point where if you're having to constantly refer to one, it does kind of diminish like what you're getting out of it, you know, 'cause you're not discovering these things yourself.
Right, exactly. And it's something I definitely battle with a lot, because it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you can put the walkthrough aside and have a mindset of, you know what, I'm going to try to figure this out on my own. I'm going to attempt this number of times. I'm just going to try to figure it out. And when I get to my last straw, okay, that's when we can use the walkthrough. That is a perspective, but I mean, when you have a lot of responsibilities and it's a game where it's like, yeah, I'm enjoying it, but not that much, or you just want to figure it all out and just go on your own, that you're investing a lot of time. You have to have a lot of patience. You have to really like the game to be like, you know what, I don't care to use a walkthrough. I just want to explore and experience, but it takes time, and I'm not willing to invest that time of, let me figure this out on my own, because guess what, I'll still be stuck on the first dungeon 30 hours later. So I know where I am and you know what I need to utilize when. Unfortunately, Zelda has me utilize that walkthrough a whole lot, but nonetheless, a lot of good things I have to say about that game. Highly recommend it still, even despite all that. But fourth game, top game on the list so far this year, and it's going to be a heavy contender for a while. Catherine on the Xbox 360. By Atlus, so you know it's got some heavy Persona vibes to it. But I was telling Ethan this, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Atlus had a private meeting and they said, you know, let's make a Persona-like game specifically for Brian Miller. And this was it. And they made Catherine, and it was just for me.
So what aspect of it is what, like, are you saying it's for you? Was it just the difficulty or is there other stuff?
So thankfully, so many things. So I'll start off with the obvious one, the length of the game.
Yes.
Pretty short game. I beat it in 8 hours. So you know, I like my short and sweet game. So a solid 8 hour game, like solid 8 hour game, not an 8 hour game plus like 4 hours of looking at 4 hours of looking at walkthroughs, but just 8 hours of solid playing and maybe like 15 minutes of, you know, checking, doing some research on walkthrough stuff. Mm-hmm. That length was perfect. Now let's go to the difficulty and length are the 1-2 for me. The, you know, if you come strong with both of those, I'm gonna be on board with a lot that is put out. So that game can actually be pretty hard. You know, you've got the easy, you've got the normal, you've got the, you know, the hard. But again, this is where that private meeting Atlus had, where they wanted to cater towards Brian Miller, and there's a button combination that you can access very easy difficulty. And you best believe I accessed immediately that very easy difficulty.
Yeah, Thracia actually has a hidden mode similar to that.
Really?
Not quite difficulty, because the game only has one difficulty.
Yeah.
But if you play the game like in this mode where like you press like the certain button combination, you play the entire game where you get double experience.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. But yeah, no, you know, when you're on the main menu of Catherine, I think you hit like select and the back button, and it like automatically like accesses like very easy mode. And I looked this up beforehand. I was like, this sounds too good to be true. There's no way. But it's true. And it makes a noise when you access it and it shows it on the bottom. You know, immediately I was like, you know what? I know this game can be hard. So, I'm here for the story. So let's take the pressure off when it comes to gameplay and let's play on very easy. And so, and the difficult, like some games are like, yeah, we're going to play on easy, but it's still going to be hard. For me speaking personally, but very easy was very easy, and I loved it. There was stage six, around there, I did have to use a walkthrough for about 1 to 3 levels, but that's it. Like not even the final stages. Like I was like, okay, I got the walkthroughs up prepared, didn't have to use them. So that was nice. So you got difficulty, you have length. Now you got story, and the story is right up my alley. I mean, you know, Persona-like games, they always have fantastic, complex, philosophical stories, and this one is no different. But it's definitely a topic, you know, up my alley, especially being married myself. You know, topics of family, topics of relationship and marriage, and the whole nine. That's all that Catherine's about, and they do it in a very, very deep. In dark, twisted way as well. You know, you gotta have right. The dark and twisted in there. But you know, you got the trio there. I'm trying to think. Another thing. We'll add the fourth one into it. I knew what I was going into when it comes to the gameplay. The you know, it's a very puzzle.
It's a puzzle game.
Puzzle yeah. centered to it. And I, you know, I looked up gameplay and I was like, man, I'm already bored of this. This gameplay, like this is going to be repetitive. This is going to be formulaic, and it's going to be hard. And it was none of those things. I actually enjoyed every single one, which is big for me because I do get bored with the same formulaic, you know, whether it's puzzles or dungeons, and I loved it. Like there was never a time where I'm like, I'm bored or I'm ready to move on. You know, I loved it all.
So let me ask this real quick. You like this game so much. It's like potential game of the year contender yep. for you from the sounds of it. Would like with the game as short as it is, would you ever go back and play full bodied now that there is a definitive edition out there?
That's a good question, honestly. And I think if you would have asked me like right when I beat the game, I would have been like, no. Right. Because
well, now we got a little bit of time.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time. And the reason, and I told you about this with Borderlands, that's still my number one game in terms of the enjoyment factor that I got from it. Like, again, we talked about this, like when you're like at work,
a longer game,
and it is a longer, it's a much longer game. But like when you're at work or if you're at school or you're just like living life and you're like eager to get home to play a certain game, that's big. Like that has a big factor to your enjoyment and your love for it. And Borderlands is at the top of that. Now it was trying to reach those levels, but it didn't quite. And it was also a shorter game, so I beat it in a weekend. So I wasn't like, I didn't have to go to work. I didn't have to go do all these things. I was just able to play it. But
right,
I usually don't play games more than once, even if they are games I really, really like. Now there is an exception. And I'm kind of surprised about this, but Persona 4. I played Persona 4 Golden, and I will at some point, and I want to play the base game Persona 4. And that's mm-hmm. big because that is a long game too, which is surprising.
Yeah.
But I had good memories with it. I had very fond times with that game, so I want to. So I'm curious to see as time goes on if I'm going to feel the same way with Catherine.
So possibly.
But possibly, honestly, especially if they keep that very easy mode, there's a chance that might be my second one. And it's kind of funny, you know. You would think Nintendo might have a franchise that Brian Miller would revisit more than once, but mm-hmm. Atlus stepping it up.
So which ending did you get?
So I got the one that I liked, actually, because I think there's eight of them. Spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Catherine, the K, okay. your original, your day one, you end up talking about wedding plans at the end, and it kind of leaves on a note like, yeah, things are kind of better, things are moving forward, and you're moving forward with where things should have been the entire time. Now there isn't like a like the true like extra good ending, which I did say.
Right.
And I said this on the post on Instagram and Twitter as well. When you play the game and you get the ending, and I highly recommend either watching all of the endings or playing through all of the endings because they're good. Like, I enjoyed almost all of them. But yeah, I got that one, and I was sad. I couldn't be more satisfied with the ending. I know there was a better one, but I liked what I got.
Yeah, good.
Fifth game, the last one I beat this year, Kirby Planet Robobot on the 3DS.
Now, we've talked about this previously.
We did talk about this, and it's kind of nice that I'm able to follow up on it and really give my before and afters. So, you know, and I said this on the graphic post as well on Instagram and Twitter, but this was my very first Kirby game, and I got a lot of recommendations. I wanted to, you know, have a solid start on the Kirby franchise. So I, you know, asked a lot of people like, hey, you know, out of all the Kirby games, which one do you recommend starting with? And many, many people were saying Kirby Planet Robobot. So I was like, okay, I can get down with that. It's the most intriguing. I know that, you know, that Robobot mechanic is pretty cool. And I actually ended up playing the demo for that game back when I first got my 2DS XL for Christmas. Before I played Kid Icarus Uprising on the game, I downloaded the demo and I played it. And when I did play the demo, it was an easy game. And recently, mm-hmm. Nikki, my wife, tried to play it, and she put it in, played 30 minutes. She was like, yep, too easy. Gotta move on. And I'm like, either this is going to be a good or bad thing for me, because I like easy. And it...
I would love to find the game that you say is too easy.
Well, I think we did discuss that. What was it? There was a game that was too easy for me. I'll have to think about that, but there was one. There was one, and I don't remember if I finished it or just moved on, but it was too easy. But yeah, this game was easy, and it was borderline. Okay, this is okay. Give me some challenge here, but it walked that line just enough for me to just keep, you know, enjoying what I was playing, and moving on. Was an easy game, but perfect. It was perfect for me.
So I've only like my favorite game in Kirby, like the Kirby franchise, is Nightmare and Dreamland.
Yeah.
Which was the Game Boy Advance game, or one of the Game Boy Advance games. And I've never played Robobot. What is the, like,
what is the big difference between those and like a more traditional, you know, Kirby game?
So being that Kirby is the only one I play, I can't speak too much, but I do feel confident to speak enough that the Robobot armor suit is the difference. And okay. You do utilize it on pretty much every stage. So it is utilized, and it and what's nice about it, it's not 24/7 you're in this robot suit, but you do utilize it, and it creates some contrast, so you're not always, you know, just floating around stealing powers. And what's really cool about it is, because, you know, Kirby's known for, you know, sucking the power out of the enemies and like transforming, you do that with the Robobot as well. And that's,
oh, so you can do that.
It's really, really, really cool. Like, it's awesome.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's the biggest difference, and it does it well. It does it well.
Cool.
So yeah,
sounds interesting.
Yeah, I recommend it. It was, and I'm glad I ended on that one.
I've actually beat a game also. Why we didn't talk about it too much.
Ooh.
Right. Yeah, because I did beat Fire Emblem Genealogy of the Holy War.
Yes.
Earlier this year.
Right.
But, you know, we never got into that, no. So I want to just take a second to go over that game real quick. I really enjoyed Genealogy of the Holy War. I thought it was a phenomenal game. Spoilers for Genealogy of the Holy War, if you don't want to be spoiled on it,
yeah,
I'd recommend, you know, skipping ahead in this podcast, because I'm going to talk about that for a little bit. I really, really enjoyed how they handled the game, because a big thing for it was is the two generations. Generation one, you play as Sigurd and his army, and you're kind of going through like a political narrative and trying to navigate all of that. And then generation two, you play as Sigurd's son Selef and his army. You know, it's been like, I think like 17 years later, and you know, things have changed, and you're trying to, you know, fix, you know, the issues in the world at this point. And I think the game does a really good job of setting up that world. It's a really good, really good story for the game. Probably probably the best Fire Emblem story that I've come in contact with yet.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I mean, it's really good. I mean, gameplay wise, it's old and dated, obviously, and like the maps are ginormous, and mounted units are so much better than foot locked units because how big the maps are. But I mean, again, I think the game is playing for the story. Like, it was worth playing just for the story alone.
Interesting.
Especially Generation One story.
I didn't know that, you know, that was the best story that you felt that had the best story in the Fire Emblem series, especially knowing you played Three Houses too.
Yeah, I mean, Three Houses is good. I like Three Houses. Story wise, it's solid, I think, but it doesn't even compare to Genealogy.
Wow.
And I mean, as a whole, Three Houses takes a lot of inspiration from Genealogy of the Holy War.
Okay.
Not just like, not necessarily story wise, but gameplay wise, it pulled a lot of inspiration from Genealogy. So, I mean, I think a lot of people would, you know, again, chapters, there's only like 11 chapters in the game. But it's probably still the longest Fire Emblem game in the series because of how big those chapters are. So it's a big commitment to play through it, but I definitely think it's worth experiencing.
That's cool. Jumping back into what I've been playing, you know, I discussed the five games that I did play and beat, but there's been some duds in my backlog that I've had to move on. I've had to just put back on the shelf, or, as sad as it sounds, put it in the trade-in pile.
One of these hurts me a little bit.
It does, but we'll talk about it, because
we haven't discussed it yet.
Okay. Well, I also have a feeling, and I know what you're going to be talking about, but we'll get into it. So I remember early on this year, the first game that I did attempt on playing was Professor Layton in the Diabolical Box on the DS, and I was actually really excited to get into this series, because it's, you know, it's a Nintendo series, and it's very mystery driven and story based.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time you were playing those Fire Emblem games, I think specifically Genealogy.
Right.
And so when you're talking about like strategy and just stuff like that, it was getting me excited to, you know, maybe play some strategy or puzzle based games. And I'm all here for the story, but those puzzles can be very unforgiving, and it doesn't matter how much mind and brain power I use, I'm not solving any of them. Now, some are easy, some I was able to solve, but it would kind of be like the Zelda situation to where I'm just going to be, you know, glued to a walkthrough for every puzzle. And there's a lot of puzzles, and that's the main reason why I dropped this game. Was because I didn't want to, because I wanted to follow along with the story. I wanted to just, you know, especially with me, when I start something, I like to finish it no matter what it is. Right. So, I'm getting into the habit to just realize, you know, yes, that perspective and value is honorable. Just some things, sometimes it's okay. You might need to drop it for the sake of time. It's not
always realistic.
Exactly. So, knowing that Professor Layton has a lot of puzzles, I knew I'd be looking up walkthroughs a lot, and I didn't want to. I didn't want to be tied to doing that. So, that might be something I add to the watching Let's Plays of, and I'll get into that concept too. But yeah, Professor Layton Diabolical Box is a game that I dropped first. Now, after Zelda Minish Cap, I actually started a game before Catherine, and that was called Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts on the Xbox 360. And one of the things, and we talked about this last night, one of the things that I forgot to mention on our episode 2021 video game anticipations was, you know, I have a backlog. At the time, it was 22 games. And one of the things I forgot to mention is that, yes, I do plan on completing these 22 games and playing through these 22 games, but there's going to be some of those games in that backlog that are either going to be, you know, too hard for me to actually complete, or I just don't want to invest in the frustration and the time to actually beat these games, or they might not click. They might not have an interest or have enough pull to just draw me in and actually just finish them. So I knew there was going to be games I would drop. I knew there would be games I would scrap and just, you know, put back on the shelf or put into the trade-in pile. Right. And I told you, I didn't know it was going to be this much. I thought maybe 3 out of the 22. well, it's mid-February and I've already dropped 5 or 6. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is. And Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, fun fact about that game is... that was originally in a trade. Like, I got it, but then I came to terms with myself when I was simplifying and decluttering my game collection. I ended up putting it in the trade-in pile.
Okay.
And it wasn't until recently that I'm like, you know what? Let me just give it a shot. Let me just attempt. Let me just at least start the game. You never know. Because the cover looks awesome. Like, I'm definitely a cover art kind of person, whether it's books or video games. I love the colors, I love the cover art, and that has a factor in drawing me into actually playing and starting a game. And Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts is one of them. And I started it. I put in about an hour one night, and it's one of those games where I appreciate what they did. It's unique. You basically build vehicles. Like, you literally, like, there's a garage, like a vehicle garage, where you customize and build your own vehicles to complete different stages. And you have to collect parts and everything to actually upgrade these vehicles to actually complete certain stages and levels. So it's really unique. It's really I like what they did. It's just not for me. Like, early on, I was like, I really don't feel like collecting all these parts. I really don't feel like, you know, investing the time in upgrading. Really don't feel like doing these, like, stages, levels, challenges, and having to cater my vehicle. Like, in theory, it sounds fun, and I know a lot of people do enjoy it, and it's, again, nothing against the game. It's just, I was ready to move on to the next one.
Makes sense.
So I did. Yeah. So I did. I moved on. And after Catherine, as well as after Kirby Planet Robobot, Ethan had the joy of watching and participating in watching the fun I was having with Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yeah, you like, you were having a blast that day.
You can actually check it out on my personal Twitch and check out, like, the first hour that I put into Conker's Bad Fur Day. But it was one that I had to drop because of two things, mainly the finicky Nintendo 64 controls. I don't think I made it fully past the tutorial to, you know, and I was spending like 45 minutes trying to jump from logs and cliffs to just progress. And oh gosh, you just get some popcorn and watch that stream. You'll
I had to shut off at one point. I'm like, I can't keep watching you just fall off this cliff. And I'm like, it was just the same loop over and over again.
It was.
I'm like, this, I don't know how he hasn't shut this off yet. Cause I know how you can be, how you can get with games like that, you know?
Yeah. And I, you know, I wanted to get to a certain point and actually progress before I did shut it off. But the uniqueness of Conker's Bad Fur Day, because I know the edginess of it all. I didn't want to just put it on the shelf or put it in the trading pile and never get into it, because like I got it to really the first 15 to 20 minutes of the game technically, so I still was missing a lot. So I was like, you know what, what's an alternative if this is a game that I'm not going to actually stick through and play? And just a, you know, a disclaimer, and we recently talked about this. These games that I'm scrapping, whether because I say they're too difficult to play or too difficult to finish, or, you know, I'm having trouble with, it's not entirely accurate to say that they're too hard for me to beat. The accurate saying would be, you know, I don't want to invest the time or the frustration or the emotions that it would require for Brian Miller to beat these games, because, you know, all these games are beatable. It's just, what am I willing to invest to do some?
Right. Yeah. I told you earlier, I was like, I'm impressed by how you just refuse to buy into sunk cost fallacy, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
It's incredible to see, because I find myself doing it more often than I should.
And it's crazy too, because I did this in 2020. There's games that I have on my list of completed games in 2020 that was an example of this. Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge is one of those games. If I played that game this year, I would have gotten to the boss, and it would have been a very Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga moment where I got to the final boss and was like, you know what? I'm at the final boss, and it does suck to quit now, but I'm going to. Like, I just, for my mental health and for my time, like, I don't want to waste any more time that I have left. And, I have, you know, a few others that, you know, at this point in life, I'm not willing to invest a certain amount of time or frustration and emotion to, that will require for me to. So, Conker's Bad Fur Day is one of them. Instead, early on, I was like, you know what, we're going to put it back on the shelf, and guess what we're going to do? Half of the game is cutscenes, so we're going to go straight to YouTube, and we're just going to do get some popcorn, enjoy these cutscenes. You know, it's up for debate, I guess, on the quality of voice acting, on the quality of the story, of just why they went the route that they did. But I absolutely loved it. It was hilarious to me. And I actually like how it ended. I have some respect for how it ended, but yeah.
Yeah, we're on opposing sides on this one. I'm not as much of a fan of this game as Brian is, but...
I mean, and there's no debate there. Everyone, this is a game to where what is your personality? Because some people are going to look at this game and be like, this is the stupidest game ever. Some people are going to look at this game and say, this is the stupidest game ever, but it's hilarious. Some are going to be like, I grew up with this. This game is number one on my list of all time favorites. And, you know, it just depends who you are.
But that's an interesting point you just made, because knowing our two personalities,
which are very similar,
but knowing how they differ, though,
yes,
you would think I would be the one who would like this game more.
You think so?
I think so. I'm more into like the crudest humor than you are.
Well, okay, you bring up a good point, because I agree with that, and I usually don't like the crude, vulgar stuff. But the reason why I can't help but to laugh when I think about this game, because it's crude and vulgar, but the voice acting is so bad and stupid that I'm just like, I can't take this. I can't be offended. I can't take this personally. This is just pure funny.
I definitely don't get offended with it. I'm just like, I don't find this isn't funny to me.
Yeah.
I'm
right.
Sitting there and I'm like, this just isn't entertaining. I'm just, it's just isn't quite what I'm wanting, you know?
Oh, gosh.
I can see the intent behind it, and in the 90s, I'm sure it was phenomenal. But you know, we're in 2021 now, and it didn't quite hold up to the test of time.
Right. Unfortunately, with this game too, when I was playing this game, you know, on the N64, and realizing, oh yeah, you know, the controls are a bit finicky on this console. I had two other games on the backlog from the N64, and that was Banjo-Kazooie, the original, as well as Donkey Kong 64, that have now been cut from the backlog after playing Conkers.
Not even gonna boot them up. Just go ahead and remove them.
So one possibly, one no, and let's start with a no, because it's a pretty easy no for me. Banjo-Kazooie
makes sense.
After playing this game, I already know I'm going to have a lot of the same issues. But not only that, what I appreciate about Conker's Bad Fur Day is a lot of these N64 games and a lot of Nintendo games in general are very collect-a-thon based. Side quests, collect this, collect that, you know, get this, do this. Right. And good grief, Banjo-Kazooie is the poster child for that.
You gotta love 1990s gameplay loops.
No, but seriously though, like, Banjo-Kazooie is a collectathon, and as someone who does not like to collect, someone who does not like to do a lot of side quests and it just wants to get what I need to get and move on with the story, I think it was just best for me to just scrap Banjo-Kazooie from the backlog. What I did do though is there is a YouTuber I like to watch for Let's Plays, and he both has done a Let's Play for both Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong 64. One of the things I think I'm going to do is, if there's a game where either it was on the backlog or I thought I wanted to play but realized that I didn't, I think, I want to be able to get what I can from it. I think one of the ways that I can do that is by just maybe watching someone else play it, whether it's on Twitch or YouTube, and just so that I'm able to still understand what's going on with the game, that so that I can still, you know, if it comes up in conversation or it comes up on a, you know, podcast situation, I'm able to say, yeah, I haven't played it, haven't beat it, but you know I've watched the Let's Play, I know enough about it to be able to speak, you know, on it, just things like that, and to still get some kind of entertainment from it. So with that being said, Donkey Kong 64 may or may not go on back on the backlog, because it really is a game that I do want to at least attempt. And I put in about like 30 minutes into it, I think, back in either 2018 or 2019. I put in like 30 minutes, but it's another example of a collectathon. There is a lot of things to collect for, I've heard, in Donkey Kong 64. So I don't know. It's a game I want to play. We'll see if that happens. So it's currently scrapped for now.
That makes sense.
But This is the game I knew you're gonna have some thoughts on.
This hurts. We texted a little bit about it, but we didn't get into it last night.
No. So last night, very, very recently, I started Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic on the original Xbox.
One of my all time favorites.
And I knew that going into it. Yeah. And I had this game for quite a while. And fun fact, I don't think I've ever told you, but just like Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, I had it.
Really?
Put it in the trade-in pile.
Whoa.
And pulled it back out.
You're talking to a guy who has bought it twice. Physically.
I know.
Bought it twice physically and bought it once digitally.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. So.
No, twice digitally. I've bought this game four times now. That's how much I enjoyed Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay, so let's get some background and let's dive into my thoughts.
Sure.
In my experience. So I grew up with the original Xbox. You know, I've mentioned that before. And funny enough, I actually had quite a few Star Wars games on the original Xbox and that I played when I was a kid. I had Star Wars Obi-Wan on the original Xbox. I had Star Wars The Clone Wars that was paired in like half the game. Like, there was a mode of Tetris. There was Tetris on it, and there was also Star Wars The Clone Wars that was packaged in with the console. I also had Star Wars Episode III on the console, and I might have had one or two more.
I had that game too.
Yeah, I might have had one or two more, but I didn't have Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. And I think if I had grown up with the game, one, like you did, two, like I did with the other Star Wars games, we might be having a different conversation right now.
Possibly. That's a possibility.
Yeah, long story short, I did some research beforehand. I knew it was kind of turn-based, which was pretty fascinating, actually. I kind of like that.
I've never really considered it turn-based, you know?
There's a lot of people who do.
I know some people do, but I never have. You get the pause at the beginning so you can kind of queue stuff up. And I guess it kind of is turn-based, but it feels more like a real-time strategy than anything else.
Yeah, because it kind of does it for you, right? Like the turn-based, like you go in turns, but
you can queue up moves and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
But like if you don't queue anything up, it'll just automatically run a basic attack, you know?
But it's still turn-based because you shoot or you hit, they shoot, they hit.
I think it's just really hidden, like, well, how turn-based it is. Because I've played it so many times, and I've played Knights of the Republic 2 so many times, and I still don't consider them, like, turn-based games, even though that may be how they're designed, you know? I think it's just hidden that well.
It's weird, too, because when I played with the blaster pistol, it felt turn-based, but whenever I played with the sword, it felt very in real time.
That's the thing. I always go melee builds.
Right. Yeah. So that's so awesome. Like I've never seen a game that kind of fuses both, you know, like, and it's a Star Wars title. So like the fact that even kind of went that route,
you know, it's really like it a big design to it. And I've kind of learned this, you know, from research over the years. A lot of people compare it to Dungeons and Dragons in ways and how you build your character and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the customization was pretty. I was blown away by the in-depth.
Yeah. When I learned that you, I turned the stream on after you had shut off because I never got to join in because you ended the stream, you know, too early for that.
Right.
But, I was watching it, and then when I found out that, you know, that you were going to be done with it, I turned it off at one point. But I was watching you kind of go through reading everything, and I was like, yeah, there's a good amount that goes into it when it comes down to building your character.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, I don't know how much it really matters, because when I played as a kid, I never really, like, I didn't understand that stuff at all, and I never screwed myself over. I was still able to beat the game. So, I think you can really make yourself better, but I don't think you can screw yourself over unless you're actively trying to, you
know? And to the point about customization, that, I mean, this is not a, you know, Brian Miller thinks this is a bad game. Actually, I think this is a really good game that's just not for me. And I think customization, I like that they went in depth with the customization. Like, that's awesome. Like that. Like how often do you get to go that in depth with a Star Wars game with customization? But anyways, so I played about an hour of it, got a feel for it. Long story short, it just didn't draw me in. It didn't pull me in. And honestly, I kind of had low expectations going in because I kind of fell into some duds with Nuts and Bolts, also Conker's Bad Fur Day. I was kind of just, it's been kind of just a bumpy road with finding a game that I'm like, okay, finally, I got something. I'm really enjoying this. So I was like, you know what? I wasn't really in the moods for it. But a lot of times with games, I'm like, let's just start the game, and then you know, we're able to get into it. You know, sometimes the hardest thing is just starting the game. So I did, and yeah, I couldn't get into it. But like I told you, I appreciate 1000% the greatness of what it is. I mean, it's a phenomenal game. Like, I only played an hour, and I could tell, like, if you're a Star Wars fan, if you're someone who likes a role-playing game like this, or the complexity and just on the original Xbox, you're gonna have a blast. This will be a top game for you, and it's understandable.
Yeah, I mean, for me and a lot of other people who love this game like I do, it's inexplicable how they just have ignored it for so long. Now it seems they're finally, you know, going back to it, but they've ignored it for so long, and there's so much there because it's the Old Republic. It takes place 2,000 years, 4,000 years, you know, before, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but it takes place so many thousands of years before the movies.
Yeah.
So you can do whatever you want because what does it matter? You know, everything, like, you can do whatever you want and it'll reset back to the movies, regardless, you know.
They need to make a TV show of Knights of the Old Republic. That's what they need to do.
They're doing like the High Republic right now, which is like I think it's supposed to be set like 200 years before the movies.
Okay.
Which is like a comic series. And then I think they're also doing, I mean, obviously they're remaking it, or from what we're hearing at least.
Yeah.
That seems to be the report that keeps leaking out. So right. It'll be interesting to see, you know, one, who's making that, and two, what they do with it.
Right.
You know, if it's truly just a remake, or if it is like a new story to be like just in that setting that is folded into current Star Wars canon, because that stands now, Knights of the Republic and Knights of the Republic 2 are not canon. They didn't get brought in.
Mm. Right.
So yeah, I can't wait to see what happens with this going in the future. I'm sure at some point in the future I'll be streaming Knights of the Republic and Knights of the Republic 2.
Yeah.
On the channel, so you'll be able to see it there.
Yeah, but maybe that's the route that I go with these games, is maybe I'm not the one playing. Maybe someone
else sounds
is.
Like there's a lot of games that we keep talking about where you're like, I don't know if I'm gonna play this myself, and I'm like, well, I'm going to stream it, so yeah. You don't have to worry about it.
And it's kind of happened that way, which, you know, hey, convenient for me, but
you know what I am hearing though?
What?
With all these games that are falling off your backlog, you got room to add Shadow.
There's room to add Shadow. The question is, will I do it? Honestly, that would be a game I would, if I literally had that on the backlog.
You gotta add him, and you gotta add Shadow, and
it'd be scrapped.
And you gotta add Shadow, drive a motorcycle, even though you're way faster than a motorcycle, carry a gun for reasons, and you gotta get all the endings, because you gotta get the best ending, the true ending to the game.
Gosh. Yeah, that's another story for another time. but that brings the question though. There's gonna be a heavy gap of, okay, well, I'm done with my backlog. I have no games left to play. What are we gonna do now? 2022 isn't here yet for the Switch and the GameCube.
How many games have you cleared off now? You beat 5 and you removed 5 more?
About 5 to 7. So I started with like 22. I have about 11 on the backlog left.
At the rate you're moving, like, you keep saying, you know, 2022 is the year of,
might start early
of Switch, but to me, it sounds like you're going to have just free time for Shadow. So,
or just
stick
free
that
time
in and stick that in and then go to the Switch.
Free time to, Hey man, I started Persona 5 Royal 22 games early. That was my favorite to you. I think I need a favorite now. I think you need to start a game 22 games early.
I'm nuzlocking for
that is not for me.
Are we confirming? I guess we're confirming this now, but yeah, you said that if I did it, you would do it. So,
oh, I don't know if I said that.
You said that on I'll find the stream.
And if you say that, I'll take it back gladly. Even if I did say, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I guess I did, but I take it back.
that's upsetting.
I have no time, not right now. I'm not doing that. No interest at all.
But you'll have the time. Your backlog's almost cleared.
Time is one thing. What I want to invest that time in is a completely different thing. But to get back on track and end on a good note, because again, I've been talking about the games that I've been dropping. The one that I'm currently playing right now, I will not be dropping. I will be playing all the way through, and it's been a nice rejuvenation and a nice refreshment to the series I said was formulaic and dull. And that was Pokemon. Okay. I'm currently playing Pokemon X, and what's funny is, you know how I was originally going to play, I played Pokemon Diamond. I was going to go straight to Black and White. And then I was going to go to X. And then I was going to finish off with Soul Silver. So I kind of wanted to go in like a chronological order, kind of.
Right.
But that would have required me to go to another DS title that, you know, isn't very friendly with the experience share. Is going to be kind of formulaic and dull again, possibly. Yeah, again, I know Black has a great story. Black and White has a great story, and I know it's loved by many, and I'm looking forward to it for those reasons.
I know, but Black and White 2 have the capture experience. That's where that gets introduced.
Okay, right. But yeah, it's also a completely different story, though, as well.
Right. It's a sequel.
Sequel, right. And that's going to be a game I get later on down the road, which, gosh, my time might be ticking on that one because that price is steadily rising. But
you don't even have it yet?
I don't have it, and I don't have it just because, you know me, like I like to have variety, so like it's very hard for me to jump like straight to a sequel for something. Like I need to play like 10 other games before I revisit a title that's similar. So, but going back to what I was saying, Pokemon X has been a nice refreshment. It has a nice new coat of paint. It's on a new console, the 3DS, a newer console than the DS anyways, and it's been fun. It's been refreshing because, you know, for all the reasons I just stated, but like, you know, yes, there's trainer battles still. Yes, you know, you're, you know, still catching a lot of Pokemon and it has the same formula, but it's just, I think the newness factor is really what's helping me to just taking a deep breath and really enjoying the adventure. Mm-hmm. And then also you just cut out the grinding and you've got a happy man, you know, playing the game because of the experience share. You just turn it on and everyone gets experience instead of just one Pokemon.
Right. I don't care for X and Y too much, but
yeah,
I did enjoy the experience share being changed like that because it just saves time, which is nice. I enjoy yes. that. And the other thing that I enjoy, it's really cool. I wish they would just go back to doing this more because I think like Z moves or whatever and Dynamaxing is whatever.
Yeah.
Mega evolutions. Those are cool.
Yeah, they are.
Those are very cool.
That is true. Now that you say that, yeah, all the other stuff is like, okay, yeah, but the mega evolutions, yeah, they add some spice to it.
See, they keep trying to like, they're like, we hit on something with mega evolutions.
Yep.
Just keep trying to reinvent the wheel. And I'm like, no, just stick with the mega evolutions.
Yeah, do it for all of them. But to the point that you said you didn't really care for it, a lot of people have that same opinion. And I knew that going in. So I kind of had lower expectations too. Basically, the synonymous voice that I've been hearing, Pokemon played it safe with this game. Like, there's nothing.
Right.
There's nothing crazy. You know, it's just a very subpar game. And I can understand where it's coming from. And there's, like, part of me is like, wow, this game is really awesome. It, like, it looks really cool. And, like, how, you know, how they did with the city or this building or this or that. But then there's sometimes I'm like, oh, that's a gym? I thought that was just a cave. Like, what?
I didn't care for like it's like why yeah. was the one I played, and I didn't care for that one itself, but I really enjoyed the mechanics from those games that were introduced into Omega yeah. Ruby, which, you know, Gen 3 is mm-hmm. my favorite, and you know, when you put the modern mechanics into it, it made it such a great game in my yes. opinion. I know not everybody feels that way about that, but I mean, I think the game has like, I think the game has a good frame to it, yeah. you know? It just doesn't quite hit what I was looking for when I was
yeah,
playing I
mean, yeah, it. They played it safe. And you know what? I'll yeah. take a safe Pokemon game that has a new coat of paint and it's on, you know, a newer console. And that's just the refreshment I need. And that was the point I was making is I was kind of viewing it as a burden going into Black because, again, it's on the same console. It was going to have a lot of the same features. But I think this has given me enough kick to go back to Black and then finish out strong with Soul Silver, to really get excited for it. So
Soul Silver is going to be
well
challenge for you.
I'll say this, and you're gonna hate me for saying this, but it's okay because the Kanto, you know, 8 gym leaders for the Kanto region is post game content. I'm actually not going to play the post game content.
Actually, after. I actually don't consider that post game content.
Do the credits roll before you can go?
I don't know if they do, but
I looked up and it was saying they pretty much do.
They may, but a lot of people may consider that post game content, but I don't like it's.
If the credits roll and there's more content,
I consider it the main game. I consider like you beat the game once. I don't want to. Spoilers for Soul Silver and Heart Gold. Skip ahead a few seconds if you don't want to hear the ending of it. I consider you beat that game when you beat Red at the end of it, the trainer from the first game.
And what's your reasoning behind that?
I think that's just the culmination of the adventure.
Okay.
You know, you've beaten, you know, you've cleared Johto, you've gone to Kanto, you've cleared that. And then you found, you know, the protagonist of the first game, and you finally beat him. It's like, so you, it's showing though that that you currently have surpassed you from the previous game. And then, so that's when I consider, and I think from there, once you beat that, the game is over. I don't even know if the game lets you, like, I think the credit, I think the credits either roll again there, or I don't even know if you get to free roam at that point anymore.
Interesting. But yeah, that if, you know, if once the credits roll the first time after I beat the Elite Four for the Johto region, I'm going to leave it at that, because it'll be nice to come back to it. It'll be nice to be like, you know what? I still have more post game content left.
Okay, so you'll just treat it as two separate games then.
Kind of, and that's how I'm kind of doing it with Black and White too, because it's like, yeah, I play Black and White, but because it occurs in the same region with the same Pokemon and the same starters and same characters, kind of, it'll be nice to be like, when I need a Pokemon fix, hey, we haven't played Black and White 2 yet. Let's jump on it.
That makes some sense. I can get that. Yeah, like never doing the Kanto portion of the game. I feel like you'd be missing out on a good bit there.
Yeah, no,
because,
I agree.
Because it changes from, like it's not the same as it was in first generation. There are changes made to,
that's cool,
you know, like gym leaders and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, coming back to it after some time and then doing it. But yeah. I mean, the issue that I see you having with it is just how grindy that game can be.
Right. Which, I mean, I played Emerald, I played Diamond. It can't be, I mean, sure, it might be a little bit more worse, but it can't be that much bad.
The issue I always have is that you're never finding, like, appropriate enemies to grind on. Like, gotcha. Like, if I could find appropriate leveled enemies to fight against, I wouldn't have as many issues as I was having. And I I had Crystal back in the day, and I loved Crystal because I was a kid and I had time to deal with that. But nowadays, like, if I'm playing, like, I was playing on my DS, and if I ever went back to play Soul Silver again, I would have to, like, emulate it, because I would need the speed up function to just overcome how under leveled, like, a lot of the wild Pokemon in that game are.
Just, man, just capture level 70 Rayquaza and you'll be good to go.
The issue is there isn't a level 70 Rayquaza.
Exactly. So you know, we will see when that time comes this year, how that turns out with Soul Silver, but for now, I'm going to end on a good note with Pokemon X. Really enjoying it. What I'm playing now, what I will finish soon. You know, let us know what you're playing now. You know, sometimes we get caught up in, you know, podcast ideas and topics, but we forget about, you know, let's just talk about what we're playing. Let's hear from the listeners what, you know, what you guys are playing right now, or what you've recently beat or going to be playing. Yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, let us know. We would love to hear that.
Yep, and make sure to follow us on Twitter, PYW Podcast, as well as Instagram at the PYW Podcast, as well as Twitch, Playing Your Way. We will be streaming consistently, so if you want to jump on that board and jump on that train, come along, come join, come in, come chat. Y'all have a good one.
Yep, see ya.